setting up shop.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Setting Up Shop, your favorite podcast, possibly. We hope so. It's me, it's Dan, it's Wood Turner from the UK. And as always, I am joined with my two lovely co-hosts, Heidi Jacobs, a potter from America.
Hey.
And Rasmus Loen, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
And today we are going to talk about demonstrations and public speaking and that thing that puts fear into a huge amount of people of standing up in front of a group who are giving you their fuller attention and actually then talking about what you do, or even potentially scarier, physically making the thing with your craft or whatever in front of a bunch of people who are watching and make you feel like you're waiting to make a mistake and all of that other fun stuff. Why are we talking about this? Well, generally speaking, we have found, certainly all three of us have found, that after you have been doing a craft for a while and after you have then gone from that craft and started selling your product, so you are putting yourself in front of an audience already through selling it, people want to know your story. And sometimes you'll encounter people maybe at a market who might be members of a Rotary Club, members of Women's Institute, or a men's shed, or a group of people who meet regularly who want people to come and give them something, some form of talk, some form of demonstration, almost entertainment to a level. Myself, it's wood turning clubs. And you will get to a point where you may get asked this. And we just wanted to share our stories about such situations and hopefully persuade some of you who might be a bit nervous or a bit reluctant that it's a good thing to do. And it's a good thing to help build confidence. And it's a good thing to sort of move you along as a person, move your skills along, but also your brand as well. So we will start this time around. We'll start with Heidi first. And Heidi, if you could just share, do you remember the first time that you were asked to give like a talk or a demonstration about pottery?
I was asked if I could come to a children's event and come up with some kind of lesson, like in clay or ceramics or whatever. They were working with community kids in a small little village near me. And basically it was funded by the state. And so there was like a little bit of a stipend that went with it. And they paid for the materials and everything. And I was asked to just kind of teach these kids about clay and kind of talk about what I did with my small business and as an artist and those kind of things. And I remember being a bit nervous because ceramics isn't something that you do in an hour. You know, yeah. It's not something that you can complete a project during a session like that. And I needed to come up with something that would be using clay, but in a way that everybody could participate all at the same time. So we weren't going to be taking turns on a wheel or anything like that. Something I could drive the hour to the facility by myself without having to, you know, worry about equipment or anything like that. And what I came up with is just making pinch pots, but instead of them actually being pinch pots, we made pinch pot animals. So
okay.
I did this lesson. Everybody got just a ball of clay and they could make it as an unlimited amount of animals. And then I kind of talked through while we were making it, I was talking through, you know, the properties of clay, how we use it, how it gets fired, and then the properties of glaze, like why does glaze get shiny and all that stuff, like things kids can understand, right? Mm-hmm. And then I took all of their animals home, let them dry. I glazed them all one color and then returned them to the people that were in leadership, and they handed the kids out their little pinch pot animals, which was a lot of fun. And I think inspired some kids to then go and take some of the pottery classes at the local pottery shop that they have there. And, you know, they were really interested. They asked a lot of questions about what it's like to be an artist. They asked a lot of questions about clay and, you know, why is this clay different than Sculpey or different than Play-Doh or air dry clay? And because a lot of those kids, you know, they didn't like the school district's art programs were going away and they weren't getting exposed to those kind of things. And that's kind of what this grant money was for, to help in these communities that the arts have been kind of put to the wayside. So it was both encouraging for me to know that I knew my stuff to talk to, you know, elementary and middle school kids.
Yeah, because they can ask some hard questions.
They can be tough. They can get bored really easily. And it was a nice experience for me to kind of teach in that level and not be too overwhelmed with the curriculum or anything. Yeah. Like, the investment was low. The results, I think, were bigger than the investment. Like, I felt really good about it. And, you know, I definitely came away going, you know, I could probably make a video of this and share it. And then, you know, art teachers could use it or different things. And I felt really good about it.
Good. Cool. Now, that sounds like a really nice first experience. Rasmus, can you remember your first time of being asked to either teach, demonstrate, talk, all that kind of thing?
I'm actually not sure. It's been so long.
Wow.
And I kind of only remember based upon, like, I know I have images of this. And it might be like 2014. So that would be like 2 years after I finished school. I got invited to help out at like the Children's Day at a local museum. And yeah, they already had another blacksmith that was coming there to do things. And they asked if there could be one more to sort of help out. And I just, what feel like the basic thing now of just like, I was forging with kids and they were like hitting the metal. They made a small pendant. I took a cord, tied a loop on it, and handed it off to the kid, and they were beaming from it. I was like, cool. Growing up in the Scouts and then going to officer school, like talking in front of people and talking with a sense of authority, or pretending to anyway, has something I've kind of always done in some settings. So doing it with blacksmithing never fazed me. It was just more like, I know that I know some things. I know that I know more than almost anyone else there. So how it goes doesn't really matter because they don't really know how it's supposed to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And what you're saying is the thing we were discussing a little bit about pre-show, where most of the time in your audience at this kind of a situation, you are going to know at least just a little bit more than other people in the audience, most often quite a lot more. That doesn't mean you can afford to make mistakes and so give a bad impression, but it does mean that the barrier to entry is a lot lower. You're able to sort of just relax and do your thing.
Yeah.
A wood turner that I respect quite a lot, who unfortunately can't teach or demonstrate anymore, once told me that all you've got to remember is in your audience is that if you're demonstrating, so in this particular instance, if you're making a thing in front of a group of people, if it's something that you've made a lot, you should hopefully be a lot better at making that thing than the majority of that audience. And you only have to know 10% more than they do. But also be open to them raising points or questions or asking why you don't do it in different ways that will help you learn and potentially try it in a different way. And, you know, it's not that people will try and catch you out. It's more a case of they're just curious. Oh, why haven't you done it like this? Or I would do it like this. Have you ever tried that? And you can quite often respond quite easily and say, oh, no, you know, if you genuinely haven't, oh, no, I haven't actually. Maybe I'll do that next time. Thank you. That'd be good to know, kind of thing. Or, you know, should we talk later and you can run through that in more detail? Because I think the big thing at these events is no one wants to see you fail.
No.
Everyone
there is actually cheering you on.
Yeah, you're not being invited in order to have people poke fun at you. And I think that's quite an important message, because a large number of us who are creative people who are now in this situation come from backgrounds where possibly we got bullied at school or we were picked on at some point during our adolescence for being different, which is why we are all so amazing now at doing the really cool weird stuff. And then we see the people who picked on us rocking up in their boring 9-to-5 job with their children, and they turn up an event and then see you smashing fiery sticks with a hammer, or, you know, making shavings on the floor, or making things muddy, and all of the people around you going, oh, isn't that cool? And then they're sat there going, oh yeah, great, I go back and look at spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with spreadsheets.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot wrong with spreadsheets. They're a useful tool to assist, not one you want to look at 9 hours a day. Not me, anyway. We always forget that Heidi's t-shirt is like, there's nothing wrong with spreadsheets.
I can make a spreadsheet for that.
Spreadsheet of t-shirt ideas. Yeah, great. Cross-reference with season, number, what time in the... Yeah.
Well, Dan, you two, like, to segue away from, you know, what Rasmus and I said about presenting to kids, you tend to present to other woodturners or people that are interested in the hobby. I would assume that that would be a little bit more stressful.
So it's a bit weird, actually. So I've done public speaking since I was 9 years old. Okay. So I've stood up in front of large groups of people who have known infinitely more than I have and delivered subjects or read from scripts or whatever since I was 9 years old. And obviously at that age, there's quite a lot of fear and quite a lot of risk of a bit of wee coming out when you stood in front of a group of people at 9 years old, a lot more so than when you're, you know, a bit older. And so by the time I was 16, 17, I was pretty, probably a bit blasé and arrogant, shocking for me, I know. And then like a little bit older again, I kind of got to understand a lot more about, hey, look, you know, preparation and all this kind of thing and speak up, you know, stand up, speak up, shut up and speak slower than you think you should, because then people will actually hear you. And so I was quite confident with all of that. And then the first time I got asked to do a woodturning demonstration at a woodturning club, and I was stood there, the benefit to me was, whilst it was the first time in a long time that I'd been nervous, I understood what the chemical reactions that were generating those feelings meant. Mm. So my hands naturally shake a little bit anyway. So they were a little bit more shaky that night. So you could work out ways of kind of deep breaths, calm down and whatever else. But what I found was the best thing was to start off by just talking about, hey, you know, this is my first public demonstration. I am going to make mistakes. I would appreciate if you don't keep a tally chart, but hey, you know, at the same time, maybe we'll have some fun and work out how I'm going to get round making those mistakes afterwards. So yeah, you just be honest right at the front of it. But yes, talking to a bunch of adults who are people who know your subject a bit more compared to children, yeah, it is probably a bit more daunting in a way. However, I would say that people who attend regular meetings of a club specifically around a subject such as woodturning, they do it because they want the community and they want to share the knowledge and they have a passion for the subject.
Yeah.
You have to acknowledge the fact that in every club there will be at least one person who may or may not be polite about coming up to you privately during a break and talk to you about something they did or didn't like about your demonstration. But generally speaking, I haven't had anything massively negative said to me. I haven't had anyone critique anything I've done. And I acknowledge that the big thing for when I do a club demonstration is you need to show things that will hit multiple levels of skill. Mm. Because at that kind of environment, there will be some people who are brand new to the hobby. You know, they've maybe got less than 10 hours doing whatever the hobby is. There'll be those who are kind of the intermediate level. And then you may have those at the club who could be even what you class as professional level. I went to one club late last year, and as I was talking and looking around the audience, it suddenly dawned on me that there were 5 separate registered professional turners in that audience. Mm. So all of whom had been turning for at least 20 years longer than I had. And so I brought it up and I even said, oh, okay. And I've just realized, hi, Dave, hi, John, hi, you know, whatever. Thanks for coming out and supporting me, because that's what they're doing. They're supporting the club and supporting me. So if any of you have got any really complicated questions, there are 5 different people here I will be referring them to. And so you can deflect it.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not going to pretend that I'm infallible in this situation. And I did occasionally have a couple of questions and I answered them and said, I think that's the best way. Wouldn't you agree, John? You know, or, you know, yeah. Or do you have a different way? So I'm fortunate enough that I've got enough experience doing almost what you could class as crowd work through having done public speaking, that I've been able to be educational, but a little bit entertaining as well. You're not making a mockery of it. You're not going too far, but you can throw in a little bit of banter. If you've got someone in the audience you happen to know, then you can kind of pick on them a little bit in a friendly way to keep motion going. But my top tip for anyone who is asked to do this kind of thing in front of an audience, when the person has booked you for this, ask them to their face, not via email, but ask them to their face, how interactive is your group? Because some groups of people will sit there in stony silence for over an hour, and you can feel like this is going terribly. There's no interaction, no one's smiling, no one's, you know, everyone's there, arms crossed and everything else. But if you know beforehand that they do that for everyone and that's just the way that group of people are, then you know it's not you, and you can just forget about that. That's one anxiety gone, and you can focus on what you're doing and all of that kind of stuff. So it's really worth finding out, is this group of people likely to shout out questions? Are they likely to say anything? Are they likely to laugh if you happen to do something? You know, what is the crowd like? So yeah, it could potentially be more daunting, but I think there are definitely things I've learned that that kind of thing is a community, and they want people to succeed just as much as the children want something to succeed. And let's be honest, a lot of them get really excited when there's fire at those demonstrations as well, even though that, you know, there could be guys in their 80s and they go, oh, what's he doing now? Mm-hmm. You know, like all of a sudden a blowtorch comes out and you're about to set fire to a wooden item on top of a lathe, and they, oh, hang on a minute. You know, there's a few people checking, are the windows open? Where's the fire extinguisher and all of that kind of stuff? So it's a different group. But I think in some ways, it's just a very slight tweak on the skill set and knowing how to read the audience, which is a skill you can learn.
If I may go back slightly, I'm not sure if anyone else calls it this, but I want to call it the Rumpelstiltskin effect. Because as soon as you name something and brings a bit of attention to it, you kind of immediately disarm it. Like it being your first time demonstrating. If you call it out, you suddenly have a hell of a lot of leeway from the audience.
Yeah.
If you immediately acknowledge that, yeah, you're not an expert on like this subject or this subject, but I'm here to talk about this thing, which I think I know something about.
Yeah.
Then you also are steering everybody into all of this. And if they ask questions outside of that, you can just go like, I actually don't really know that much about that.
Yeah.
Or you can refer to someone else in the audience that, like in your case, Dan, that might actually have an expertise in exactly that and go like, talk to this guy.
Yeah. I mean, one of the first questions asked by in that particular scenario, when I had those various different experienced people in the group, I was literally putting pencil marks on the ends of a spindle blank before I put it onto the lathe. And I said, I'm going to do it like this. And one of them called out, why don't you do it the other way around? And just without thinking about it, because there's a way my brain's programmed, I just looked up and said, because this is the way around the book showed me when I learned it like 4 years ago. You know, and everyone laughed because it was exactly that thing of, hey, this is the way we've all learned in different ways. And it's like, I mean, they're both just as relevant. But so why don't you do that the other way around? It's more efficient. I was like, well, this is because this is the way I've always done it. Okay, is there a different way? Oh, great. You know, maybe I'll try that next time. And it's definitely an interesting thing to do, and I've got a lot of reward from it. I feel that it's really driven me forward as a creative person in a wide variety of ways. But you know, we can talk about those later if you like. But it's an interesting thing to demonstrate or public speak about your subject. And there was a little point that I was going to get to, and people can tell I'm flannelling around right now, but it's gone. I can
jump in a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I've done all of those speaking things before, but I still get nervous, like a lot, before every single time I try to do something new in front of people. Yeah, teaching the classes I'm doing now, they are fine because for the most part, I have now been teaching pretty much the exact same two classes for 10 years this year. So that, like, even though they have developed and changed a lot, like that part is fine. That's routine. I feel like I'm basically just show up in my own workshop. I point and grunt for 2 days and then people walk home happy. Like that's like not to diminish what I'm actually doing, but that's how it kind of feels to me. And I still really enjoy that because I get to interact with people and talk to them. But as soon as I am about to do something new and different, like then I start to get like the handshakes.
Yeah.
And this doesn't stop. Like every single time I do something like that, every single time I do some public speaking, yeah, I have that nervous kick. And I know like, this is how my body reacts. This is normal. And we move on.
You know, so, I find it interesting that recently Rory May, Dirty Smith, posted something about, you know, going to watch other blacksmiths do a presentation. And he's like, you'd think that I'm paraphrasing. He's basically like, you'd think that it'd be kind of boring going watching somebody else do the same thing that I do on a regular basis. He's like, but when you're at this level, you start to look at, see what, how they work through their process. So Rasmus, like, you working on something new is probably interesting to somebody like him, trying to see like, okay, well, how are they going to get themselves out of this situation? They've backed themselves into a corner. How are they going to engineer a solution? And Dan, to your point of, you know, kind of saying, this is how I do it. You know, that's what these experts are coming in looking for. Like, oh, I wouldn't have done it that way, but he got to the same result.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because I might want to, like, you know, tweak how I do it to resemble what you're doing. And, you know, the nerves and everything that can come up with that, if you're thinking about that, the fact that you may not have the best way to do it, you may not have experienced every single issue that can come around, come up when you're presenting it, but people are there to learn.
Yeah.
And I did that. What was it called? The Virtual Craft
Festival.
Yes, there. Yeah. I can never get it right. I did it for like a whole year. But I remember somebody saying like, oh, can you make a bird on the pottery wheel? Can you throw an object and then distort it and make it a bird? And I was like, oh, I mean, I have time. Let's try it out. And so like, I just kind of talked through the methodology of like why I was thinking about how I was doing it, which made my nerves kind of calm down, because I definitely, in those situations when I was doing the virtual craft show, I had to worry about the cameras. I had to worry about the noise. I had to make sure that I was paying attention to the monitor that I had set up to see like all the text and everything. So it was like 10 times bigger than me just sitting at my wheel doing like an Instagram live or something, where the audience, in this case, the audience is like really interactive and they're kind of throwing these curveballs out to you. And I would get like super nervous beforehand, and I'd watch the other people, you know, do their presentations or whatever, and, you know, try and get my nerves down. But it wasn't until I touched the clay that I'd just be like, oh, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been here. I've put 10,000 pieces out into the world. I know what I'm doing. I feel good. I know what the clay is going to do. If I mess up, it's let's just talk through like what I did wrong. And, you know, I had a couple of things flop on the wheel while I was presenting, and it actually created more entertainment, I think.
You show you're human. And I think the thing is as well, so for instance, in wood turning, and there must be the same in every craft, there are a few moments where, so if you look at a piece and it's nearly there, and your brain will say, I'll just take one more cut. And see, Heidi's already laughing because she's done some wood turning. When your brain tells you to do that, every wood turner who's been turning for like a minimum of 5 hours knows that when your brain tells you to do that, that is the time that you should put the tool down and walk away, because that is when you will make a mistake and ruin the piece. And so I will deliberately play into that when I'm doing a demonstration, and I'll look at things and I'll be like, this needs one more cut. You know, who in the audience thinks I should try to take one more cut at this point? And you can kind of get a show of hands, and like, or you'll get people going, oh, no, don't do that. You know, and then it's up to you whether or not you do it. And then more often than not, when you make a mistake, everyone will then go, hey, or something, you know, and it's fine, because there was expectation, and then there's the payout. Yeah,
you're building
or if you don't do it, if you do the cut and you succeed, you get just as good a result, because you've built the tension up. It could go either way, and everyone knows that feeling because everyone's done the same thing. So that works well if you are demonstrating your craft to a bunch of people who do the same craft. But there must be a similar thing in, you know, pottery and blacksmithing and other stuff. So if you're demonstrating that to people who, again, are doing the same craft, there are little things you can do that just kind of a little nudge to go, hey, look, we're all the same. We all make this mistake. We all know what's going to happen now, you know, and all that kind of thing.
I have one thing kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe two things, but it might be the same, just different angles. Like, a part of the demonstrating, I try to sort of give all of the participants at the class a bit of an estimate of like how much longer I will be talking until you'll have a go at this. And sometimes it's more like, oh yeah, I'll just have maybe one or two more heats and finish this. And then sometimes you fuck things up and it takes another three heats.
Mm.
So I have kind of learned to see, like, so I'm supposed to be able to do this in one heat. I haven't decided yet if I will manage it in one heat, but we'll see.
Yeah. Or the other one was, I remember when I did a bit of blacksmith training with Joe and Steve, and they did something which I think they clearly did every time they did a lesson, was when they put the iron in the fire, as it were. And then they were talking and they said, and people wonder how we know when it is, you know, and they've got their script worked out just about right. So all of a sudden they've got a sparkler.
Yeah.
And that's been in there for too long. You know, it was clearly scripted, or not scripted, but clearly been said many times before, but it was still just as effective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's definitely things you can do. I mean, going back to the handshaking thing, I did for a while, and it just jumped into my head, it did for a while, when I would notice that my hands were shaking and before I'd actually started my demonstration, I'd have to go off in the corner somewhere to stop myself having a little giggle fit, because my brain would remind me of the scene from Blazing Saddles where the guy who's the gunslinger holds out his hand and it's like steady as a rock. And the guy goes, well, what's wrong with that? He said, well, I shoot with this hand and the other hand's like flailing all over the place. And it was just this nervous kind of brain twitch of going like, hey, look, you know, you turn with these hands.
Mm.
And, you know, I'd go off and have a little bit of a giggle to myself and probably look like a mad person. And then
more than usual.
No, yeah, more than normal. But going back to what you said, Heidi, I think it's really important what Rory said. And a big shout out to Rory. I haven't seen stuff from him for a little while. Obviously, the algorithm is telling me I don't want to follow him.
He's still out there.
I'm sure he is. I'm just saying, the naughty algorithm for not letting me see his stuff. I will watch wood turning demonstrations and I enjoy watching them. But my intent of watching a wood turning demonstration is twofold. One is, if I know and like the wood turner, it's to support them. I mean, even if I don't like them, if I know them, it's to support them. But secondly, if I am watching a 2-hour wood turning demonstration, I want to walk away from that with at least two things that I have learned that I can apply to my own turning. Now, that might be a slight different riff on a technique that I already do, or it might be at the stage of turning I'm at now, how someone stands slightly differently when they're doing a particular cut, where I can notice, oh, hang on a moment, actually, they're able to get a bit more room around there, which I always struggle with. Is it because my body position is not right? Am I too close to the lathe? Am I too far away? That kind of stuff. And I definitely feel that it's valuable to go and watch other people do the craft you do, and not just the rock stars of your craft, but like people who are on a par or slightly better than you are. Not that there's a way to judge that normally, just to see how they do something differently. I went to an all-day demonstration last year from a guy who's been turning 40 years. And when we say 40 years, I mean as in he's been doing a 37 and a half hour week turning for 40 years. Wow. So he kind of knows what he's doing. And I have saved in my phone in the notes app, I have like 40 things listed and none of them follow on from one another. They're all little things that like, oh, this is a tweak, this is a tweak, this is a tweak. And I've applied probably almost a quarter of those. And one of them I use in the demonstration that I go around with now and go, hey, look, the little bud vases I make, the base of them used to be really horribly torn out because of the way that you'd cut them off the lathe and then, oh, what, you put them on a belt sander. Well, if you're not very accurate with that, you can get a lopsided base. Well, he showed a really simple way to make a little jam chuck for it, which is really easy for anyone to do, and just push it on and then you can finish the base.
Yeah.
So going back to what I said earlier about the demonstration, you can show people, hey, look, this is the beginner level. And then this is the intermediate level where the base is a bit naff, but people will say, oh, well, no one really looks at that, so it doesn't matter. And then you've got the professional level where every part of this piece should be as important as the other. And therefore, we're going to do this little thing here. And the amount of people afterwards have gone, how did you make that? What's that made out of? Is there something special about it? And it's like, this is a scrap piece of wood that I've literally turned down. So it's a spindle that is 3 inches long and it's got a section that can be gripped in the chuck. And it's the same diameter as the hole that goes in. So all of the holes are like 8 millimeters in the thing that I make. So it's an 8 millimeter spindle and it literally uses friction to hold it in place. And then it's got a flat spot as its reference point, so it doesn't flop around or go anywhere. And it's a stupidly simple thing to do, but the amount of people who haven't seen that, who are intermediate or more experienced turners, and then they've taken that away. So they've learned the thing. And the reason why that's valuable to me as a demonstrator is because they're the people who vote whether or not I come back again next time.
Yeah.
Right.
And given that that's a paid gig, I then have the opportunity to say, hey, you know, I came here in 2025. I'm taking bookings for 2027 now. you know, normally these kind of clubs book every other year kind of thing. These are the dates I've got. Would you like me to come back again? And so you can get your repeat bookings in and you can start building up a rotation. So I'm aiming to try and get 12 demonstrations a year that are evenings. And I'm currently, for this year, I've got 9. So I'm on the way to that. And then after that, the next step would be to get a club to book you for a full day's demonstration. So that means you either get to make one big thing, which, you know, because it's across a much bigger period of time, or you make a whole series of smaller projects of varying levels of difficulty. And obviously you can charge more, but it also means that you get to showcase more and you get to develop your skill set more and all of that kind of stuff. And you get a bigger reputation for, oh, what does he do? Oh, well, he just made a bug vase. Well, that's not very exciting. We won't bother with that again. Oh, well, actually, he made an oval hammer handle, a bud vase, cake stand, a this, a that, a da-da-da-da-da. Oh, and then he showed us a really interesting technique playing around with decorative copper on some of his wood-turned work as well. You know, it's a broadening of your skill set, because if you get invited back as a demonstrator, you've got to do something different.
Yeah.
Or at least you should, because
like you absolutely should.
I mean, you can be an expert in one thing, but if people know you as the guy who will show, for example, interesting ways of making a bud vase, and maybe you have 20 different ways of making them that all are distinct and interesting.
Yeah.
Most other people probably are happy to know 3.
Most other people are happy to know 1 and then move on to something else.
Yeah, exactly. But if instead you are that guy that comes up and always does something new, weird, and interesting, people don't actually care about what you're demonstrating. They are just curious to see what it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my plans for this year, and I haven't applied for it yet, I've got until the end of February, there are grants available for helping people develop their skills. And there's a particular tool that a Swedish woodturner uses that I want to go and learn how to use, because it's not used very often in the UK. And if it's called a ring tool.
Oh, boring, but okay.
Yeah, it's probably called something much more exciting in Swedish. So, but it's something that whilst it is available in the UK and some people use it, it's not commonly taught, it's not commonly demonstrated, and people don't really understand why you would and wouldn't use it and when you would and wouldn't use it. Mm-hmm. So I've just kind of got it in my idea that, well, if I go and learn, I've then got another demonstration where it's unusual and different. And then a lot more people are then going to go, oh, hang on a moment. I followed that guy that you've learned from on Instagram. Oh, you're in the UK. Oh, that would be cheaper for us to speak to. Oh, actually, can we have you come and do a demonstration for us? Yeah, absolutely, you can. So I'm developing a skill set, but I'm also creating interest. And it's a bit of a roundabout marketing whilst also teaching myself. And if it doesn't work like that, I've learned how to use a new tool.
You're just making me realize now that maybe at some of the Open Forge days, I should actually try to have guest demonstrator come in and show off a different technique or do something interesting.
Yeah.
Instead of just let people come and forge, which has been excellent so far. Yeah. I'm suddenly realizing that, oh, for fuck's sake, that's a good idea. I should maybe do things better next time.
or do it as a different day. Don't even call it an Open Forge day necessarily. Tweak it a little bit. Go out to your mailing list of people already and say, hey, look, guest demonstrator doing a technique that, whatever.
You can even say, like, hey, I would like to bring this person in and I'd like to pay for their travel. You know, would you be willing to toss in $5 to participate or whatever, so that we can bring this person in, because you know, at the end of the day, it's not cheap to travel.
Yeah. So then you've got a paid for demonstrator that you stand at the front of and keep people out of the way so that you can learn everything from them. Sorry.
I mean, that's the end goal, right? It's all about you.
Obviously. So, I mean, we're talking about this because all three of us are quite experienced, whether it's public speaking or demonstrating about our craft. We haven't addressed what do you say. If we set aside demonstrating something that you make, what is it that you would say at such an event? Because I know one of the questions I've been asked by people before is, well, I don't know what to say. What would I talk about?
I mean, you can start with obvious. My name is Diego Montoya. You killed my father.
I think that's a very niche reference.
Prepare to die. Sorry, I forgot the last part.
You might listen to the podcast. But I'm not a six-fingered man. So I don't think this is what you should say to your audience.
Hello, lady.
Yeah, absolutely. Old Spice adverts. Mm. I think the starting point would normally be to remind you that if people have asked you to come and talk or demonstrate them, it's because they want to find out about you. And what's your story? And how did you get to a point where you are making whatever it is you're doing? You know, where did you come from originally? What's your origin story? Think of it like comic book series. What's your origin story? You know, how have you developed? How have you found your superpower? And how's it going now? And if you want to bring in an arch nemesis, then, you know, make sure you don't name names that can be reported back in court. And you can definitely cover struggles and things that have been difficult. And because people do like sort of an underdog story as well, but it's making it relatable, but not fictitious. So be honest, but also, you know, be comfortable with the level of honesty that you're sharing.
And always leave them wanting more.
I mean, that depends. If you're a talker like me, that's normally because the time's gone and people want to go home. It's not because I'm actually gone. And that's it. We're going to stop there now. It's more like, actually, guys, it's 9:15 and they've got to pack up and go home. So
I mean, that is also, I mean, as long as it's been entertaining and educational.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the point.
I do like the idea of like, there's like levels to presenting. Like you might get invited to do like a 5-minute talk to kids, or you might get asked to teach a class, or, you know, it keeps leveling up, you know. And then eventually you're invited to do maybe an artist in residency, where you've got like 2 to 3 weeks or months where you're at a location and you're, you know, the main person teaching how to use a facility. Like, this is how I run a workshop or those kind of things. So like, there's levels to everything. And I just think it's an avenue that a lot of people, when they're an entrepreneur, don't get an opportunity to do, because they're selling doodads and widgets and, you know, maybe somebody else's product, but in this like
okay, so that world. That's got to raise a question then. So absolutely, I agree with you, Heidi. I think because we are crafters, that means that we have a unique opportunity where people want to find out more about us. I think Rasmus is cheating by being a blacksmith, because everyone likes things being set on fire and being smashed with hammers. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, everyone wants to see that, despite how much they've seen it on TV, because Fortune Fire is real. So I've got to ask the question from both of you. Have you got, talking about that artist in residency, have you got that location in mind where you would love to get invited to even just once to do a talk or a demonstration, because the prestige behind that, you know, the ego boost, let's be honest, the ego boost of being asked to do that thing at that location. Have you got a location where you think that would be? Somewhere. I mean, Raz, I feel like you've already hit that, because your old school has asked you, haven't they?
Yeah, and I just had an email from them again today that they confirmed that they might need me this spring, but most definitely next year, for next semester.
Okay.
So that's kind
for
of like...
How long next semester? Is it a one-off?
No, that's going to be a week guest teaching at my old school. And that's like, ooh, that's... Yeah, that I didn't know I was there yet, but that's kind of cool.
You're there.
I guess, apparently.
Yeah, that's because, pretty awesome.
And that's sort of all of my feelings of never sort of taking a full apprenticeship, never doing a journeyman test, and sort of feeling like I, for years, was outside of the normal blacksmithing educational path in Norway, despite doing a lot of teaching myself. And then at some point showing up to a couple of these events and then being recognized and being like, oh, you already know a shit ton. And I'm like, how do you know? We have seen it on Instagram. It's like, well, okay, I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize people watched the thing this year.
Yeah. Things like that. So yeah, having that bit of recognition of like my old school is actually recognizing that, yes, they want me to come and maybe do guest teaching, and they recognize specific things that they want me to teach that few other blacksmiths in Norway are doing the way I'm doing. Nice. It's kind of like, oh, okay, that is kind of cool.
Okay. That is pretty awesome. Heidi?
Well, there's several locations around. We've talked before about how much the Appalachian area is very much crafters' paradise in a way.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of schools that are specific to the crafts and, you know, art centers and those kind of things. So I think any opportunity like that would be a huge ego boost and kind of be like, oh, so... Actually, I'm a potter. That's really great. Because like sometimes I get caught in my head, like, okay, I haven't quite found my artisan voice yet. I've been kind of making what people want, or things that I know that can sell or whatever, but I haven't really found like my own personal voice to be like, this is, you know, that it's a signature piece of mine. Yeah. I'm still kind of, I'm just about 8 years in, and I'm still kind of in, well, I guess I'm closer to 10 now. I'm still at that place where I was focused on the craft. Like, how do I do this? What equipment can make me better at what I'm doing and more effective, and, you know, being that production potter.
Yeah.
But now I'm very much of a mindset of like, okay, well, now that I have the craft understood, how do I find my voice visually, and what does that entail? And I think once I get there, then I'll feel comfortable applying for those kinds of opportunities. I don't know, Rasmus, if that's why you were a little hesitant to like reach out to your school or, you know, whatever, but like, I don't know that I would reach out to like Sweetwater here and be like, I'd love to do this thing that I'm really good at doing. Like, I don't have that like voice yet, if that makes sense.
I was basically sitting with the guy who is now head of blacksmithing at my old school at the National Blacksmithing Meetup last year now. And we were having a few beers. And at some point, I basically just asked him, like, so what are you looking for in guest teachers? And he basically kind of immediately said, like, well, I think you would be an excellent fit. And here's a thing that might be interesting that I've seen that no one else seems to be doing a lot, and which is specifically sort of doing prototyping, production work, and developing processes for making that. And that conversation was kind of easy. But that was more of me trying to ask, what should I work on to get there?
And he's like, you're already there.
And nice. And then I find myself already arrived. And I was like, oh, well, okay. And I've been wanting to have that conversation with regarding a few other things as well, which is not relevant at all right now. But for example, like, I know some people who is doing management for YouTube creators in Norway. And just having the conversation with them, like, are you interested in tradespeople that want to go into doing YouTube? And what would you look for in that? And like, I haven't published a proper YouTube video in years.
Yeah.
But I still want to get to that point and use YouTube more to produce long form content. Because for me, that's part of marketing. That's not a revenue stream in itself, but it's a part of marketing.
Yeah.
Right.
But if I can then get some sponsorship deals in from this and have someone that I trust to manage that side of it, that would be excellent. But that's like, I know that's far off and I haven't dared to have that conversation yet because I haven't done, quote unquote, any of the work in the last like 5 years or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, there's definitely a case of, I mean, you've brought the point up, Raz, of, if you don't ask, then it's very difficult to get those opportunities.
Yeah.
I mentioned a little while back that there was a professional turner who pushed me to contact a magazine to write an article. And okay, I dropped his name and there probably was some weight there, but also the professional standard for photographs that I sent of the products and the way that I wrote the email, it was not a particularly long conversation. They just basically came out and said, that'll be amazing. Here are the rules. Here's the timeline, which basically there isn't one. Write it when you feel like it. We would like you to do this project here based on that picture that you've done. That would be really good. And I think that would be a lovely front cover photo kind of idea. Now, I haven't done the article yet because life, but the barrier to entry to that was quite low. But what I would love and be absolutely a massive ego boost from my point of view in the world of wood turning would be to be invited to guest demonstrate at one of the American or even Australian wood turning symposiums.
Ooh.
Because particularly the American one and the Australian one, both of them, the reason why I say those is because everyone travels from across the country to those. So it's not like the Southwest UK symposium where, okay, there's a lot of clubs there and it'd probably be a reasonable event. But, you know, you can travel from the Southwest to the north of this country in under 10 hours. It's, you know, whereas Australia or in America, it's like, oh no, we are flying to this event and we are going to leave the day early to catch the flight to get to that, to then travel there to do this thing. So people are paying a lot of money and spending a lot of time to come and see that. And on that basis, they only invite people who they feel will add value to that. And I don't feel I'm there yet, which is absolutely fine. But I have already laid the groundwork with doing demonstrations in the UK, and then the article will probably help. But also, I may happen to know a couple of people who are possibly senior up on the committees who invite those kind of people,
which
helps because I've gone to demonstrations, I've gone to events, I've networked and spoken to those people. And I've at no point, same as you, Rasmus, at no point have I gone, hey, would you invite me? I've just said, how do I get there?
Mm.
what's the path? You know, what are you looking for so that I know to work on myself to get myself there? And that's where some people have kind of helped you not skip a hoop, but kind of go, hey, look, you don't need to do that step. You're already there. You can just kind of step around that and you're at this stage. Because I think it's risky, all of us doing the thing we love for then revenue, that we will get lost a little bit. You know, a bit like you sort of said there, Heidi, like you're still looking for your artistic voice. Well, if all you were doing was being a hobbyist potter, you possibly would have found your artistic voice sooner, but then being that stuck in the opposite side of it, which is, oh, well, now I only want to make my artistic voice pieces. But everyone's like, yeah, but they're not worth anything because we don't really know who you are. So it's, you know, it's that catch 22 of where do you work on first? And I think establishing yourself as a, you know, establishing a revenue stream so you can do it full time, you know, hopefully doing that stage before you're then necessarily being recognized for certain things can work. And when you do that volume of work, that's only going to help you realize what you do and don't enjoy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'd never tried hollowing out a piece before until Rasmus was like, you need to make me some tankards. Okay. You know. Yeah, which is still off shot and haven't been completed yet. I know. Getting asked to do things like that then pushes you and then makes you realize whether you do or don't enjoy something or whether you're like, oh, actually, no, now I've got another skill set.
Yeah.
I've got another little thing that I can add in. I've got another little technique. All of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there are many benefits to doing this, many benefits to the public speaking and to the demonstrating. I mean, not least of which is that you are marketing yourself. And if you're really fortunate, you will be paid to market yourself. You know, I'm not going to give exact figures and they will change with the dates and times anyway. But when I get paid to do a demonstration, a wood turning demonstration, it is a 2-hour demonstration and they pay for my time and they also pay for my travel. And that's all pre-agreed. But then they also quite often allow me to bring things to sell to the event. So I can then top up that payment quite nicely. And I found that's a very useful thing to know that, hey, I've got, as I mentioned earlier, 9 spots throughout this year that I know that's what I'm getting paid on that date or within the week of that date. So you can spot where your revenue is coming from. There's the marketing, there's the potential for extra revenue. There's also, if you're then demonstrating or chatting to an audience who isn't of your craft, let's say a Rotary Club, for instance, people might come up afterwards and say, oh, can you make this thing or can you repair that thing? Or do you know someone who can do this? And so you quite often will end up with follow-on work because you've got a captive audience. They're not just casually strolling past a market stand.
It's a lot easier to sell to people that already want you to be there.
Yes.
But also, I think it's fair to mention that even though we have all had a great benefit from doing a fair bit of public speaking and demonstration and teaching, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to.
Nope.
Especially, like, I think it's great to step out of your comfort zone and to push your boundaries and try new things, especially things if this will help your dream come true in your business. But maybe you do that and then realize that this is not for me, or this is not for me right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I have other things I need to figure out first. Maybe I really don't feel like I have the skill set to stand in front of people or the nerves to have all of that attention. And that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I think it's worth thinking through this and figuring out, is it worth trying? Is it worth trying to become comfortable with doing these things?
Yeah, I think the main point is if you get asked if you do it, don't reject it out of hand.
Yeah.
You know, you can say something along the lines of, oh, well, I haven't done one before, but here's my details. Pop me an email. Let me know what you're thinking, you know, how long it is, what kind of stuff you're after, and I'll let you know. That way it's not an instant dismissal and you can really consider it.
Yeah, or also like, honestly, tell them, like, I haven't done that before. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, but we can talk it through more and maybe we can find a middle ground because clearly you want me to do this kind of stuff. Did that sentence make sense?
It absolutely did.
I was just looking at your face and I was like, oh, are you processing what I said? Or
no, how I'll said explain later what I was thinking.
Okay.
I'm not going to derail the conversation. I think unless Heidi's got anything to add to that, no. Okay, cool. I think that's quite a nice little way to wrap this session up. And if people want to hear more on this topic, then you can tune into our Patreon account where the after show will be. And we will have another conversation there. So you can sign up for free to Patreon. But if you want to hear the after show content, there is a nominal fee of, I think it's $3 to sign up, which is a monthly fee. And then you get access to all of the after show content, which is extra elements of us chatting, Yeah, so please do that. If you don't want to pay for Patreon, which is absolutely fine, difficult times for everyone, but you do want to support us, there's a number of ways you can do that. The first and most important one is sharing a link of us to friends, interested friends, talking about it to interested friends. You've got someone who you suddenly discovered, you know, you're at a market, you're surrounded by people selling things, and they're wondering, how did you know all of these tips about making things elevated height and putting plants out and all of this kind of good stuff? Oh, well, I listened to this podcast. Share it around. Tell you what, Raz, we need to do a printable sticker of I heard it on this podcast or something like that, so that we can can give those to people to pass around at the markets. So yeah, tell some friends, or you can leave a nice supportive review on whatever podcasting app that you listen to help us, give us a nudge up the chart tables, as it were. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We enjoy doing this, and we'll keep doing this. We do want it to grow. And if you want to get hold of us, you can follow us on Instagram at settingupshop. So it's setting_up_shop, SHOPPE. Or you can reach us individually. You can reach myself at tarrants.co.uk, TARRANT. That is tarrants.co.uk on the website. That's also what my Instagram is, and various other things. You can reach Rasmus at RasmusLoan. And you can reach Heidi at Whitehall_pottery. It's been lovely to talk to both of you again, and I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to us. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.